WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline Beneath the Surface. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. A dozen or so citizens, diverse in age, ethnicity, and political leaning, come together once a month around a table to eat lunch, discuss political issues, and learn about one another. This is a group whose paths might not otherwise cross in any meaningful way, and we're attempting to see, over the course of the year, two things. Whether the tone of the conversation changes in any substantial way, but almost more importantly, whether this group will form strong enough bonds to want to continue their friendships. Now in month 7, we're embarking on the second half of the experiment, and we're changing some things. Instead of having a few members of the group for our on-air discussion, we'll have everybody each time. We're also going to share our lunches with listeners now, when our group seems to be the most open. There's safety in numbers, right? With us today, Morgan, Daryl, Cedric, Lydia, Catherine, Connette, Jim, Lee, and Joe. Welcome, BTSers.
Thank you.
And just a reminder that we recorded today's conversation earlier, but if you have observations you'd like to share, you can send them to us at coastline@whqr.org. We've paired people up today in ways that will hopefully exploit their ideological differences. Remember, this group dynamic is about people sharing their deeper selves, their biographies, and how they perceive their own lives and their place in the world. It's going to get more challenging, but we're starting with some fun. Each pair has spent some time hearing about what their partner thinks is the funniest thing that has ever happened to them, something that gets them every time they think about it. So we're going to hear from just a few right now. Lee, we had you paired up with Joe, and Joe told you a story that you thought was rip-snortingly funny.
Yes, he did think it was rip-snortingly funny. And it's pretty funny. It's pretty good. He told a story of being in Colorado skiing with his wife, Catherine, and how at the top of the hill he realized he had to go to the bathroom, but he wasn't close to the lodge, and he had the idea, well, I'll just take off my skis and go into the woods, not realizing that the snow in Colorado is different from the snow in New York, that it's fluffier, that you sink in it. And walking into the woods, he suddenly found himself waist deep, flailing in snow, trying to get out, and having something he had to do. So it was a matter of figuring out how to resolve the issue and getting back up onto the trail, all the while that Catherine, standing on the trail, laughing her head off.
Do you remember this, Catherine?
I remember it, because I had to go and pull him out, pretty much.
Thanks, guys. Interesting, I was laughing at the time, but it was a struggle.
Frightened. I literally had to hand him my ski poles, and he had to grab my ski poles as I backed up to try and get him out of this trench that he was in. Laughing.
Morgan, you have a story about Daryl.
Ours was sort of potty humor, too. For Daryl's 70th birthday, his family took him to a sort of high-end hardware store and made him wear a wizard hat. And his family dared him that the first person who approached him and sort of looked at him strangely, he had to say, "Well, I've just pooped my pants."
Sorry. Oh, no.
And so, of course, we can all imagine Daryl, a very composed person in a wizard hat, having to say that. And, of course, the first person that approaches him is another older gentleman, and he does actually say it to the surprise of his family. And the man says to him, "Well, I'll be moseying along then."
Uh.
Daryl, how did you feel?
I wasn't nearly as embarrassed as my son was. My wife was bent over, and our daughters, everybody was laughing. That poor old gentleman, white haired, he just hobbled on down the aisle and said, "I'll just be moseying on along." Anyway, I have not been invited back to Harbor Freight.
Okay, this is my kryptonite. I'm still five. Cedric, you have a story about Lydia.
It's hard to top that, though. I just keep looking at him in a wizard hat. And like, he almost kind of looks like a wizard a little bit, you know? So I'm like, oh, wow, this could, that would have been really... That was, yeah, but yeah, she shared a story with us about something I really didn't, I wouldn't have thought about. Like, I'm now trying to, like, look back into my life. Anyways, a kid, I guess, for the first time being told to draw a hand turkey.
To do what? Oh.
Exactly. But now think you're a kid, right? And nobody has actually demonstrated or showed you exactly what a hand turkey is. And you now, your imagination has to take control, right? And so she was expressing to us about her and her husband, how they got the artwork from the kid that was inspired by this draw a hand turkey task. And it actually ended up being a turkey on the end of an arm. And so it was just funny for me because of just the thinking process of how I got to that. And then how we'd actually never really seen the picture that she saw. And so the picture that I have drawn in my head could probably be nothing like the actual picture, but it's just funny to me because I know what I would have done, like, you know, like, is the hand, like, I'm like, is the turkey really drawn out really nicely and precise? You know what I mean? Like, I'm just, yeah, so I thought it was pretty funny.
Lydia, that's a turkey on your hand. Yeah. How old were you?
Well, it was actually recently. No, it wasn't me.
It wasn't her per se.
No, yeah. We got some grocery bags from Harris Teeter that were decorated by students from Wrightsville Beach School, and I was unloading my groceries, and I saw this strange picture, and it was like my husband was coming in the house, and there was a strange picture on there, and it dawned on me as I was looking at the picture, this isn't a hand turkey. It's a drawing of a drawing of a hand turkey. So it was like a turkey in the shape of a hand with a wrist, a shoulder, and an arm. And for whatever reason, in the past 5 years, I couldn't breathe. I thought that that was so funny. So that is, I mean, maybe I don't have a funny life, but the hand turkey thing, every time I see a hand turkey now, that's all I can think about.
Cedric, I'm curious, what was your story that you told that you thought?
It wasn't funny.
It was funny.
But it was funny enough for you to tell it. You landed on it.
And we laughed.
I told him about, I don't know what my most funniest moment is, but this is like one of the most recent funniest moments I've had, was a very random Uber ride that I had. Like, I took Uber to the office one morning, and my driver, for some kind of reason, wanted to tell me about the incident that she just had because the roommates that she was on, the house that she was living in, wanted her out and she didn't want to leave. And so the person called their friends over to physically remove her out of the house. And then she got scared and tried to run out the window, but then they grabbed her from out of the window, like mid jumping out of the window attempt, and pulls her back in, and then she scrambles away and ends up being able to run across the hall to the other room that has the AC unit vent in the window, and she removes the AC unit vent from out the window and runs out, and then they still catch her because they just run out the door while she's coming out the window, and all I wanted was just a ride to work. You know, like, I didn't ask for this. I didn't sign up for this. And so it was so funny. Oh, it was so weird. Like, I was like, it was no way that I'll be able to retell this story and my friends remember it. And so actually during the middle of the conversation, you said it best. You know those moments when you just wish you had a camera on hand? Well, I did on my phone. And so I went live on my Facebook. And the video has been going viral.
Did she know that you were?
She had no idea. She's not on it, but you can hear, like, all you can just see is my facial reactions to our conversation, then me getting dropped off and getting out the car and saying, man, I got to go ahead and get me another car soon. Yeah.
Well, the next exercise that we're going to move into is finding that point of opposition between you and your partner that potentially holds the space for the most friction. We're going to talk about why it's important to defend people's rights to points of view that are extremely different from your own. So we're going to talk about the results that you found when we come back from this break. You're listening to Coastline Beneath the Surface. If you'd like to weigh in with your own observation, you can do that by emailing us at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Beneath the Surface. Coastline Beneath the Surface. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. With us today, Cedric, Connette, Lee, Lydia, Catherine, Morgan, Joe, Jim, and Daryl. It's our civil discourse experiment to see if diverse people can grow to value spending time together and sharing ideas. Now we're going to explore and maybe revisit the reasons why defending the right to an opposing view is not just worthwhile, but critical to the health of a democracy. In Arthur Brooks' book, Love Your Enemies, How Decent People Can Save America from the Culture of Contempt, he writes, "We know that insults are mostly ineffective and can make our interlocutors even more opposed to our point of view. There are practical reasons to avoid them, but there's the moral reason too. They're just plain wrong. We simply should not put up with insults, whether from the other side or our own. Indeed," he writes, "I'll take it a step further. When someone on your side insults people on the other side, it is your responsibility to take it personally and stand up for those with whom you disagree." We're talking about moving away from contempt and towards more open, healthy disagreement. It's easy to dismiss someone with an eye roll or a turned back. That's the quick and easy dopamine hit we get from contempt. Here's what our group is doing. They're with their partner, someone with whom they vehemently disagree on at least one point, or perhaps we'll find out the group has come to such a point that they don't vehemently disagree anymore. They are in a hypothetical situation in which someone has called their partner stupid or uninformed or both, and basically has said that person shouldn't really have a vote or the right to voice their opinion because they are evil, selfish, stupid, uneducated. Pick your insult. So we're going to find out, first of all, what they discovered in this exercise, what the issue was that they chose, that they found oppositional, and then how they would defend that person's right to voice that point of view. So let's start with Morgan. What was the issue that you and Daryl chose?
We chose the right to choice that a woman has. It was the first thing that we talked about, and so I knew we would disagree. I think we're as pretty far as any two people in this room in terms of age, gender, politics, and upbringing.
And what is Daryl's point of view?
Daryl believes that a woman has a right to choose, but only up to an acceptable point in the pregnancy where he believes life starts. And because of his faith, he believes that pregnancy is a gift and that up to a certain point, it's all right to terminate, but afterwards it is a taking away of life.
And we know, Morgan, that you disagree with that
vehemently.
Point. Do you think Daryl has a right to that point of view?
The way that you phrased it when you opened the exercise, I could find so many ways to support his right to his point of view. I think it's an informed, educated perspective. I think he's listened to women in his life and has made his personal beliefs based on women's beliefs, and I respect and admire that. So the fact that I don't agree with it, I can still see why he's come to that conclusion.
And do you think it's okay that you won't agree with his point of view, possibly ever? I mean, I'm seeing tension in your face, and this is one of those moments that I wish that we could have a camera on you, because there's so much that's just coming through your face and your body language. You're working really hard to express his point of view. Would you defend it ever? Not the position, but his right to that point of view.
I almost wish we'd chosen a different topic, because I know there are other ones that I could defend, but I do think that having safe, legal abortions is better for our society, and it puts women's lives and our society's life in harm to not have legal abortions. Mm-hmm. So I don't think I can defend his point of view, but I can defend how he got there and that he has a right to it.
That's an interesting distinction, really interesting distinction. Cedric, you were with a group of three because we didn't have an even number. And the three of you have said, we had a hard time finding a real oppositional point of view. Can you tell us how that played out for you first?
I think we all have strong opinions in different battlefields. And so they were like, what do you think about this battle? I was like, not my fight.
What's an example of something that wasn't your fight?
Like, just coming from the conversation of abortions. One was pro-life, the other one was pro-choice. And I'm like, I'm not a woman. That shouldn't be my decision. And so, you know, I'm like, so it wasn't something that we can mutually go back and forth on. And then even before it even got to me to even say more, my opinion was, they both were kind of like, I'm not that passionate about that topic that much. And then we got to politics, and I'm like, I'm definitely not doing that. unless we're talking local, but then that would be really messy on air. And so then we shied away from that. And then, I told him, I'm not really too strong on too much, unless you guys want to keep the Confederate statues outside on 3rd Street, and then we all agreed on that. So, and then we started.
The three of you agreed on that? You agreed on what should happen with the Confederate statues?
I mean, what should happen with, but maybe that they shouldn't be on 3rd Street. And so then after that, the dialogue opened up into a different conversation. It evolved into a conversation about how coming and being a part of BTS and Beneath the Surface, that, like, my intentions is never to come in here looking to debate or disagree with somebody or find a topic of conflict, but really just to share my experience and hoping that my lens and my view and my vision can reflect on your day-to-day approaches and people. And you can just add that to your catalog of information when you're analyzing a human being or a situation. And so we started to reflect upon that. And then, then we were like, oh, well, I guess we all think the same about certain different things. And it's like you got to talk about a subject and then kind of get us into it, not really just looking to find a debate or disagreement.
Catherine, did that dynamic surprise you? I mean, I'm surprised, I'll be honest with you, and maybe I'm making a generalization here, but to hear that you, someone who has identified publicly as a right-leaning Republican, agrees with your moderate and progressive liberal colleagues about what should happen with Confederate monuments. That surprises me.
That it was that I necessarily agreed with it, but it's not a passion. It's not an issue. I wasn't part of that original discussion, but listening to it, I think there were some very valid points made on both sides of the argument that I'm not a Black Southern person, and coming from the North, I didn't have the same experiences that a Cedric would have had about or around those statues. So it wasn't that we totally agreed on it, but it's not one of my passions to really predict. But I think one of the things that we did decide is that we were all thinking for ourselves, thinking critically, if you will. And that's part of why we're here in this group, is not to just jump on an issue because it's the popular issue of the day, but to think critically for our own. And some of our opinions may be different than what we're labeled at, you know, because we are individuals and think for ourselves.
So do you think that's a new development here, Lydia? Is this part of the group dynamic, the fact that we're starting to drop labels and we're starting to see more of the human?
I do think so. But I think we were saying, Catherine and I were discussing, that most of the people in the group that agreed to be part of this group are critical thinkers, and that most people understand that there's never a black and a white to an issue. There's a gray area. So of course I can understand Catherine's point of view about what the Born Alive bills mm-hmm. and her strong opinion on that, because it, you know, it makes sense. But that, from my point of view, is a very, very small wedge of the larger abortion issue. But I think, you know, I'm someone that is a registered Democrat, but there's a lot of issues I have with liberal ideology and what's happening right now in the Democratic Party. I have a lot of family that are Republicans, so I very much understand that there's a middle ground, that there's gray area, and that everyone is entitled to their point of view.
Con Ed and Jim, what was the issue that the two of you landed on that you determined was the most oppositional?
Well, we had a hard time finding stuff because...
Wait a minute, Jim. This extreme liberal, is it fair to say that you're pretty far left?
Yeah, like I would never call myself a Democrat. Like, they're way to the center or right of where I want to be.
Right.
And I have to say, I disagree with this statement I've heard several times in the course of the 6 months, that somebody or somebody's family is to the right of Attila the Hun. Because I don't think Attila the Hun was a conservative. He was a brilliant general, and he conquered almost the whole known world through some very effective methods, which I completely agree with. For those who don't know him, I mean, he was very strategic. He went to a town, and he said, surrender or, and if they didn't surrender, he killed them all.
Okay, so before we get to the issue that you and Connette discussed, we have to allow Joe to respond, because we know that you're talking about Joe. In fact, we opened this entire show in January with Joe self-describing as to the right of Attila the Hun. And I think, Joe, you said your son called you that.
Yeah, but the interesting part of it is I'm glad he agrees with me. I mean, he just justified the aspect that he was a great general. He had some great ideas, and he carried out... I mean, the issue in terms of how he did it may be a problem, but the man was straightforward, had his ideas, and did what he had to do. So thanks for agreeing with me, Jim. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. And I mean, maybe it would be more effective to say I'm more to the right than, say, William F. Buckley, or I'm more to the right than, say, Rush Limbaugh. You know, if you say something like that, I can kind of got an idea of where you're coming from. But if you're to the right of Attila the Hun, I don't know what to think. So, but that's just me.
No, we're having some fun with this, Jim. I appreciate it.
So Connette and I started talking about an exchange that we had early on when I asked her about reparations. And I said, yes or no, do you believe in reparations? And she said, no. And I just shut down. And then—
When did that exchange happen?
That didn't happen on the air. This was like an after show discussion.
Was this early on, or was it last time, or how recent was it?
It was early on, but not at the very beginning.
Okay.
And then we had a chance to clarify, and then we both kind of said, okay, well, there's room for negotiation and discussion on that topic. Would you agree with that?
Well, one size doesn't fit all. And like Lydia said, there's no black and white. There's a lot of gray area, and you have to look at specific circumstances, whether you're talking about abortion or reparation. We're all unique individuals, and we have to look at people that way.
Right. We talked about the president and why people voted for him the first time. It wasn't necessarily because they liked him as an individual, but they disliked the other candidates so much that they couldn't vote for them. Where I, held my nose and voted for the other candidate. So I realized that people who support the president are not necessarily all of the labels that I want to put on him and some of his supporters. There are very reasonable, thoughtful, caring people that don't like the alternatives in our elections. So I don't know how everyone else feels about, our politicians. But a lot of times it's the lesser of two evils. And so,
is this new for you, Jim, separating support of President Trump from, I don't know how you would label people in the past who supported President Trump, but what are some of those stereotypes that you...
Oh, you mean like they're all deplorables? I think it was one phrase used. I mean, I knew that wasn't true. I knew that people could not, under any circumstances, bring themselves to vote for Hillary Clinton. And I understood that. I didn't like what they were signing up for by voting for the other guy. I kind of wish that they had not voted at all. But I have voted in every election since I was 18, as I suspect most of the people here do, because it's a civic duty, and everybody should vote. It's just unfortunate that, I think of Jim Hightower in Texas, and he said, if God had intended it for us to vote, he would have given us candidates.
Funny man.
But, we often go to the polls choosing the lesser of the two evils. And therefore, we now are at a point where we're so split on every issue. And it's our own fault because we have been voting for evil for the last 20 years.
Okay, that's a leap.
No, because when you're choosing between the lesser of two evils, you're still voting for evil, in my opinion.
Connette, if you were in a circumstance among your friends, and let's say that this is a group of friends where everybody in the room is a Trump supporter, everybody voted for President Trump, and while there are shades of gray, as you say, most people in the room would do it again, and then they start making fun of, say, someone like Jim, who... At this point, I won't ask you who your favorites are in the massive Democratic race right now, but we can assume that they're along the lines of some of the farthest left candidates. Is that fair? As he engages in performance art that pushes, we need a camera in this room. So, Connette, what is the upside to defending somebody like Jim and his right to support a far-left candidate?
Well, again, you're demonstrating freedom. We all have freedom of speech. We learn from one another. I think that's why we support listening.
Mm-hmm. What did you learn from Jim in this discussion that you just had?
He's not as evil as he looks. I'm kidding.
You say that, and
I'm
we
kidding.
All laugh. But is there an element of that that we're starting to strip away? I mean, is that a real part of this process?
Absolutely. Because we're all getting to know one another a little better. And he had ideas about my thoughts that were really not true. So after discussion, he understood the gray part and that specific situations may have a different determination.
Can you share a specific, Jim, that you learned about Connett that briefly that helped you understand her point of view a little bit more?
Well, I knew that she was not completely anti-abortion in her beliefs. I heard that from a previous show, so that I kind of I already knew. We started talking about healthcare, and I think the longer we could talk about healthcare, we could get into some disagreements. And I think it may have to do with the role of the federal government. I think you're more of a states' rights person, and I'm more of a federal government type person. And I get my ideas of large federal governments from a battle that's been going on for 200 and some years. I mean, there were people when they were writing the Constitution that thought the federal government should be huge and cover benefits for everybody. And there are other groups said, you know, we just need to let each state decide for themselves. And I've always been a big government kind of guy.
You're listening to Coastline Beneath the Surface. When we come back, more on defending the right to points of view we might find disagreeable. If you'd like to weigh in with your own observation, email us at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Beneath the Surface. Surface. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. With us today, Morgan, Daryl, Cedric, Lydia, Catherine, Connett, Jim, Lee, and Joe. It's our civil discourse experiment to see if diverse people can grow to value spending time together and hearing other points of view. We are coming off an exercise in which people paired off, chose a particular topic that they found particularly oppositional, and engaged in an exercise in which they defend their partner's right to that point of view, not because they agree with that point of view or that they ever will agree with that point of view, but because the right to express that point of view is foundational to a healthy democracy. Lee and Joe, tell us the topic that you picked. Let's start with you, Lee, and how that went.
Before I start, I just want to say there's a phrase that's kind of been lost to the culture, and I think it's important. It's one I grew up with. It's one that was pounded into me. I may not agree with you, but I'll defend to the death your right. I may not agree with what you say, but I'll defend to the death your right to say it. I grew up with that. I think it's important. I just looked at Joe and said, "All right, I'll go there. Trump." And he said, "Sure you don't want to do immigration?" And I said, "We probably agree more on immigration than we disagree." But
why did you think that? Why did you think Joe would agree with you? And just to
I've heard some of what Joe has said about immigration. And I believe in a secure border. We had a whole discussion about the wall. So I know from that discussion that Joe and I are, there are always going to be distinctions. There's always going to be a difference in how we see the world and in our approach to effective resolution of problems. But he and I are less apart there than we are about our president. Where do you want me to go from here?
Well, tell us about Joe's point of view.
I will.
On the president, and then defend it.
Joe sees Mr. Trump as an effective president, that his policies are working, that he made promises during the election, and he has better than most politicians kept those promises or is in the process of keeping those promises. He feels that he did acknowledge that Mr. Trump's personality and the tweets, the remarks will sometimes make him cringe, but that he feels that the way he's approaching problems, whether it be the economy or how we deal with the world, is effective. You know, Joe believes in a very strong America, and he also feels that we have gotten away from that over time, and that Mr. Trump is bringing us back to that. Now, I disagree with all but one of those positions. I cringe too. But of course he has the right to be there. And it's curious that you paired us up, because I have actually defended Joe in conversation in my house. Because there, in a conversation, in a group where people, I have a friend, very smart, one of my best friends in the world, who if you support Trump, he wants nothing to do with you.
Do you understand why your friend feels that way?
Absolutely. I understand why he feels that way. I also think he's wrong.
And why is he wrong?
Because you can't stop engaging with people. And you can't stop seeing people as human beings, because the moment you do, it's dangerous.
So we're talking about making assumptions about people's motivations here. So that's what this whole group is about, in a way.
Well, I don't know that... Okay.
Tell me more about your friend.
No.
What he would make it mean. What he makes it mean about Joe, that Joe supports Trump. What does that mean about Joe?
Well, he's stupid or evil. And I said, no, he's not. He's neither of those things. And he is, he's well-intentioned. He's educated. He's been in the world and has been around the world. So I'm not going to accept that he's either evil or stupid. So and my friend looked at me and said, well, better you than me. So
how did you feel defending Joe to your friend?
Fine, frankly. Because it's important that we, first of all, my friend has no clue about Joe because he's never met him. And he's making an assumption. And have I changed through the course of doing this? Possibly. That I would defend someone with whom I vigorously disagree. Maybe I have changed. Maybe I was always this way. Maybe I was always a saint, Rachel. Who knows?
I'm trying not to get up and do a happy dance.
You know, first of all, in our conversation, and he talking about Trump as the president, I can understand where he's coming from. The only area that I took a major disagreement with is, and he vigorously said, Trump lies. And I looked him in the eye and says, they all lie. And that's part of what they do to get, you know, in terms of the process they're involved in. And other than that, I can understand where people don't like his personality. They don't like his tweets. And, you know, that sometimes, like he said, there are times that I cringe. But the reality is that he's reaching the mentality of a large segment of the population out there. And his, I think the point was made before about people held their nose because they didn't like the other candidate. And I disagree with that a little bit, is that the nature of the man and his ideas and how he presents himself has appealed to a large segment of the population. And they didn't vote against Hillary as much as they voted for Trump. And I think that's the strategy that is being developed now by the political party going to that base. But getting back to the nature of the relationship here in our discussion, it's easy to, it should be easy to respect other people's opinions. I know that I'm not going to change his opinion drastically. I also know...
He defended you, though.
I know. And I would defend...
He's calm when he's surrounded by people who think like he thinks.
And I can... But see, that's the nature of the individual. And I think that's the point he just made, and that's the point that I really want to make, is that, you know, there are... We can agree to disagree... And we can do it civilly. I get frustrated about people like his friend. And they're on both sides. I mean, I deal with that a lot in terms of the nature of the organizations I'm involved in.
So let's go hypothetically to one of those organizations right now where a group of Brunswick County Republicans are sitting around and having a good laugh at the expense of the other side. And they start to talk about somebody like Lee, who doesn't support Trump for the reasons that I imagine you, Lee, expressed to Joe in this conversation. Can you defend Lee's right to that position?
Sure, I have no problem defending that.
Okay.
Just at a meeting yesterday, you know, with some of the people, I talked about we have to put out information to educate. And we're not going to get everybody. But the point is, if we educate the people to what we believe in, you know, then we're going, we're not calling people names. We want to educate the people to what we believe in. If they don't accept our belief, that's fine. I mean, they don't have to. But the more people that we can reach in a rational type of way, in an education type of way, we may be able to help them understand where they're coming from.
Do you think it's important that you, Joe, as a leader in this community, and I'm talking about Brunswick County Republican leadership, work against the denigration of other points of view and work against insulting people?
I don't think we should. I do not.
Do you think you need to stand up for Lee?
Of course.
Okay, so
I have
do
no
it.
Problem with that.
So stand up for him now.
Well, Lee is an intelligent individual who has his own views and comes from a different type of perspective than I do. And there are times when, and I realize that I am not going to get him to my perspective in terms of where I'm coming from. But I am
Where is he coming from?
He is, his position in terms of, probably in terms of the economic positions we discussed a little bit, you know, we talked a little bit, I'm in agreement with Mr. Trump's economic position, and some of the comments he said, yeah, the economy is good now, and if it lasts another year, it's going to be great for his election, but it's going to crash. Well, it crashes eventually, and it's cyclical, and it whatever.
So, Joe, I'm trying to get you to articulate.
But what I'm saying is that, you know, he's entitled to his position. I'm not going to criticize him for having that position. I don't think he's stupid. I don't think he's arrogant. I don't think he is any different than I am, other than if we went in a different social situation and politics weren't the issue, we would get along fine. And I bet you there's about 25 other topics that we can talk about. And it's the same way. So I defend it. Anyway, I have a lot of Democratic friends that I deal with. I'm in a lot of organizations that are mixed. We don't talk politics, but we respect each other. We work for other common goals, whether it be my role at the hospital, my role as a realtor. I mean, I'll serve a Democrat, conservative, white, black. I don't care. I'm going to give them the best quality service that I can give them because they're entitled to it. But the interesting part of this is that I don't have to. I think that what's happening is that there's more friends like he has, and there's some on my side that are creating an issue that is driving us to a position that we're not going to be able to come back from that easily. And that scares the hell out of me, to be honest with you.
Daryl, we only have a few minutes left, but tell us about your experience hearing Morgan's point of view. And first of all, explain to us the part of her point of view that you disagree with, and then I'd like to hear you defend her right to that.
Well, Morgan is very opinionated about a person having the right to choose. So she's very much into the individual freedom of choice. And my difference with her involves a moral issue. And but she has every right to make a choice. And as I pointed out, I knew people who made those choices, and they had to live with consequences. And that she felt that it was their choice. And if they chose, then they were going to be living with the consequences, but it was their choice. Okay. And there's where I differ with her, because I know from firsthand experience with people that are my friends that some of the consequences of making those late-term abortions. We both agree that first trimester abortions are decisions that we can respect both ways. But it's the later-term abortions that we disagree with. And I have known firsthand what long-term effects that has had on women who have made those decisions.
I have to stop you there and say you don't know firsthand, maybe secondhand.
Secondhand.
But I think this is part of the discussion here, okay. Is respecting other people's experience and how that experience then plays into their policy positions. You read the book, Daryl, that we've talked about a lot here. What's, in your mind, the biggest takeaway from the book about the importance of moving away from contempt and engaging with people with whom we disagree?
That's exactly the word, contempt. And the important thing is that we should all be tolerant, be acknowledging, and make efforts to be respectful of other people's opinions.
Thank you for that, Daryl. And that is this edition of Coastline Beneath the Surface. Thanks to our group, Connette, Morgan, Lydia, Catherine, Jim, Cedric, Joe, Daryl, and Lee. Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Producer is Caitlin Freund. Production manager is Caitlin Hanrahan. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. If you missed part of this episode, visit our website at whqr.org or catch the podcast. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline Beneath the Surface. We'll be right back.